Okay, let's learn. So we begin this week, Sefer Vayikra, the third of our five books. Sefer Vayikra as a whole deals with what we just completed at the end of last week's parsha, the completion of the construction of the Mishkan, and the Torah now teaches us how to function in that Mishkan, primarily through the karbanos, the various offerings and sacrifices, and how they're done. And our parsha will begin that description from the beginning of the parsha, which we're not going to be covering this morning. The parsha begins by telling us about the different karbanos, the karban shlamim, the peace offerings, and the ola, the elevation offering, and the karban chatos. We have a sin offering, and whether or not it's brought from a lamb, or a sheep, or a goat, or a bull, and all the different types of offerings. We'll get to eventually the flour offerings, and that's discussed at great length throughout this particular sefer and in our parsha. What we're going to be discussing is literally two psukim this week. And we're going to be discussing what's known as a korban asham, a guilt offering, and a guilt offering that's given or brought for one specific reason, something that's known as me'ila. Me'ila is, let's do a brief introduction as we get into it. Again, we're going to be on page 564. Me'ila is where a person misuses property that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. When the Beis HaMikdash stood, a Jew was able to donate or consecrate elements of his property to the Beis HaMikdash. He could do so in a number of different ways. He could actually consecrate an animal and say, this animal or this basin of flour is going to be offered as an offering onto the Mizbeach of the Beis HaMikdash. That could be done because those items were actually brought, and a Jew could make such an item designated for use in the Beis HaMikdash. And that was called, he was makdish, or made it hektish. Hektish from the word kodesh, or sanctified. And now that animal belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. It's in my home, but it's not mine. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be brought as a sacrifice. A person can also do that to his money. He can make his money property of the Beis HaMikdash. And he has the ability to do that to actually anything, even if it's not something that will eventually be brought. Like, for example, he could take a book. He could say, I love this book so much, I want to dedicate this book to the Beis HaMikdash, and then it becomes sanctified. Now, they can't do anything with it, so the gizbar, the gabbai, so to speak, of the Beis HaMikdash would come, and he would sell it and take the funds for the Beis HaMikdash. But the property at that point already becomes the property of the Beis HaMikdash. A Jew made it sanctified and no longer his, and it belongs to Hashem and his house. And a Jew can do that in gratitude for his new car, his new home. He could do it for things that will actually be brought as an offering, and he could do it for things that will not be brought as, but there's such a thing in which he makes it kodesh. Now, once it becomes kodesh, once you take this item and you dedicate it, you consecrate it for use in the Beis HaMikdash, it's certainly forbidden for a Jew to use it for his own benefits. Not only is it forbidden for a Jew to use this property for his own benefit, that's what we're going to learn about, that if he does, there are severe penalties for the use of sanctified property that the Jew used for his own personal benefit. That's the topic that we'll be discussing. Let's take a look inside, and then we'll have much more to discuss on page 564, starting with verse 14, Pasuk Yadalin. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor. Hashem speaks to Moshe, saying as follows, Nefesh ki sim'ol ma'al. And that is if a person will commit treachery, the word me'ila. Me'ila is going to be the word. That's the topic that we are discussing. When a Jew uses an item that's property of the Beis HaMikdash for himself or herself, that is called me'ila. And so the Torah uses that word, if a person, we ki tim'ol ma'al, will commit this treacherous act, v'chata'a bishkaga, and sin unintentionally, mikadoshei Hashem, from Hashem's holy property, v'hevi es ashamo l'Hashem, and he will bring this asham, he will bring a guilt offering to Hashem, ayol tamim min hatzon, it will be a unblemished ram from the flock, be'erkecha kesef shkalim b'shekel ha'kodesh l'asham, and the Torah tells us exactly the value of silver shekels according to the sacred shekel, and that will be his guilt offering. So a couple of points we see right away. We see that the title of this violation is called mi'ila, that when you use something that's sanctified for your own personal property. We also see this korban is called a korban asham, a guilt offering. We'll talk about this in a moment, which is different than the general sin offering. If a person inadvertently violates other prohibitions of the Torah, he brings what's called a korban chatos, from the word chet, sin, a sin offering. And this is a new category called a sin offering, an asham. We'll talk about that. We also see that this is if it's done inadvertently. If the person doesn't realize this carbon is only brought, if you know that this book was sanctified for holy purposes, if you know that the animal was consecrated to be brought as a carbon, and then you go plow your field with it, knowing that it was already consecrated, so you have lashes and a different punishment, but this carbon, this offering, is only brought, as the Torah said, if, I forgot that this this animal had been consecrated for holy purposes. I didn't realize the money in the bag that was sitting there on the counter was put aside to be brought to the Beis HaMikdash next time we go, and a person took it and used it for something else. Only if it was inadvertent. I didn't realize, then you bring this particular carbon for violating this principle called Mi'ila by using the sanctified property for your own purposes.
If you designate something for the Beis HaMikdash, so, and then you decide, you realize a few days later that, you know, it was a mistake, I shouldn't have done it, because you do it with your mouth, with words, right?
Correct.
Can you change? Can you say...
You have to buy it back. You couldn't just change it.
You just can't just say
no,
it.
No, yeah, well, that doesn't work. Once it becomes the Beis HaMikdash, you can't just take it back.
That value has to still go there.
Yeah, you could buy it back, but you couldn't just undo it.
No,
no backsies.
No backsies.
Pasuk Tezayin, next Pasuk, Veis Asher Chata Min HaKodesh Yishalem, the person who has deprived the sanctuary will make restitution. Meaning, now, besides the offering that you have to bring a korban because you were violated Me'ila, you used sanctified property for your own purposes. Aside from that, now you have to pay the value of what you just desecrated because the Beis HaMikdash owned this thing, and now in your using of it, you nullified that. You made it mundane. You took that which should have been holy and take it out of the principle of sanctification. So now you need to repay or replace that which you have taken out of its status of sanctity. So you add a fifth to it. V'chamishi so Yosef alav. And as often we find in the Torah, when you have to repay something, you have to add a penalty beyond that. So if you, let's say the value of the item that you used was worth $100, we do it in our language. We would call it a fourth. You'd end up paying 125th, meaning the extra 25 is 1/5 of its total value. You'll give that money to the Kohen, and then the Kohen can provide the atonement with the ram of the guilt offering, and it shall be forgiven him. So, in order for you to get your atonement with the offering, you have to pay up the fine, or first pay the principal of what you made mundane, which had been sanctified, and you undid, and then you add the fifth, and then your guilt offering can atone for you. Okay, so far so good. Pretty basic, a halacha called Mi'ila. Let's take a look at the Ramban first. So in the sheets that you have in front of you, you'll see the sheet that has the Ramban on top. Yes.
Who decides what's going to be the offering or what's going to be sanctified in the Beit HaMikdash?
Who makes the item sanctified?
Yes.
That the individual Jew? In other words,
why does the Jew bring something, the animal? How does he decide?
He wants to bring a korban. So if he says, he wants to because he wants to say, I need to bring a korban. So he says, this is the one that I'm going to bring. Or he says, I'm so grateful, I had a great crop this year, I want to give this as a gift to Hashem as a thanks. So on his own volition, either because he's obligated to give something and he's now designated what he's going to do, or on his own he just wants to do something. But either way, he declares, this is going to be property of the Beis HaMikdash. Whatever the case may be, in which he's obligated to bring something. Okay, the Ramban is going to address, everyone have the Ramban? Or sitting, or at least sitting next to somebody who has it? So as I mentioned a few moments ago, the main sin offering, if a Jew inadvertently violates something, He brings what's called a korban chatas, a chatas from the word chait, which means a sin offering, and that atones for his inadvertent action that he violated one of the more severe prohibitions of the Torah. If he does it on purpose, it often carries a death sentence, but if he does it by accident, so then he just brings a korban, what's known as a korban chatas. But this that we just introduced now introduces a new name, and it's called a korban asham, or loosely translated as a guilt offering. And so the Ramban asks the basic question of, if in both cases the reason why you bring it is because you did something wrong, inadvertently, some cases it is inadvertent, some cases not, but why do we have different names? What do they signify? What does it represent that we have these different names? What's the difference between a korban chatas, a sin offering, and a korban asham, a guilt offering? So the Ramban addresses that. I labeled the parts that I'm going to be reading, A, B, C, and D, so you could follow along easier. Starting with the A, the Ramban asks, V'lo nizboyer matam, it's not clear, what's the reason? Shema korban ha'echad chatos, v'shem ha'echad asham. Why one offering should be called a sin offering, and another type of offering should be called a guilt offering, when they all come to atone for sin. They're all basically the same. See, he makes a couple of suggestions which he rejects, and then we'll go to paragraph B. Vanir be'enai, it seems to me, says the Ramban, ki shem asham, the name asham, which we've translated loosely as guilt offering, mora al davar gadol asher ha'oinesh yischayev lihios shamem. The word shamem comes from the root of the word to be ruined or destroyed. And so that this offering represents where the perpetrator, the one who violated something, which is so grievous a matter, that the punishment should have been a total ashem, a total ruin, a total destruction because of the sin. As the language he points out, we find that language of ha'ashemim Elohim, God should destroy them, we say, referring to our enemies, or our enemies, the land has become, vayeshmu, has become decimated. So we use that language for total destruction. V'chein ashemim anachnu, the brothers say, when Yosef, when they run into trouble in Mitzrayim, and they're accused of all sorts of things, they say, ah, this is because we are guilty. They use that language, ashemim anachnu, and that's why we're being punished. V'chatas, in the beginning of C, v'chatas, but the term sin, moira al-davar sher notabo min haderach. That just indicates something which the sinner has veered from the correct path. And he brings a proof from a verse from Sefer Shoftim, the expression of someone who can sling a stone at a hare and not yachti, and not veer off. So the word chet was, you were supposed to be going here, and you veered off the course. So the word chet represents you were off. You were supposed to be going towards this target or this direction, and something happened and caused you to veer off the path. So that requires an atonement to, so to speak, put you back on the path. But a korban asham, this new sacrifice that we just read about, that's a higher level. That's not just a sin that's a veering off the path. That's where, really, there should be destruction. The prohibition was so bad that it should cause a decimation, and therefore this atonement should atone for that, but it was somehow a worse violation, and that therefore requires a new level of a atonement.
And this pertains only for the offering? These two things are only for offering guilt? And since the difference between guilt and sin offering, it's guilt and sin, punishment, it's all for offering.
As opposed
offering.
To what? What do you, I'm not...
So this pertains all to how you offer or what you offer?
What, yeah, well, in other words, the type of offering that it is. In other words, whatever the violation was will equate to, this is what you need for an atonement. So one is called, and they're done a little bit differently, but it's basically, you know, what category does it fit into? Now, that's a heavy assessment the Ramban is giving, that if you inadvertently violate, and the other prohibitions for a sin offering are pretty severe violations, but if they were done inadvertently, you need a sin offering because you inadvertently did something. But the korban asham generally is done for something purposeful. Like we're going to see, for example, we're not actually going to spend time on this, but one of the examples the Torah says is where you know testimony for somebody who asks you to testify, and you say, I don't know. I don't want to testify. So you don't do that which you are supposed to do. So that requires a Karban Asham. And the Ramban goes through the list in, on the second side of the page, which I have as D. He goes through all of the various violations that require this higher level Asham, a guilt offering, because really what you did is something that requires worse, and we're going to let you bring this as an atonement, but it's a higher level. And he needs to address our particular topic, because our topic is only also inadvertent. Torah was very clear. If you use the Beis HaMikdash's property, and you use it for yourself, that's when you bring this karban. But the Torah was explicit. Only if you do it by accident. So that he needs to explain, why is this on the list of higher level violations if it's all done without intent? Says the Ramban in D. Now, if you want to read the whole thing, he goes through each one of the various, I think there are five, each one of the particular prohibitions that bring about this new category. But let's just focus on ours. Aval Asham Mi'ilos Afal Pishahu Bishogeg, the guilt offering brought for the misuse of sacred property, which we just read about, even though it is only brought if he transgressed inadvertently, says the Ramban, since the sin involves abuse of Hashem's holies, meaning consecrated property, that's why the offering is called this special guilt offering, because it is a grievous sin through which one is indeed deserving of becoming devastated, just as you see it referred to as treachery, the word mi'ila. What's so treacherous about this? You took Hashem's property, and you did it unknowingly. So we would start and say, I didn't know. We say, that's the problem. That's the problem. There are certain things you could say, and one of the examples where you bring a korban chatos is where you ate fat. There are two types of fat when you slaughter an animal. There's permitted fat and there's forbidden fat. You should never eat any fat. It's not good for us, we now know. But there is a type of fat that's permitted. But there are the fats that surround many of the major organs that are called, it's called chalev. It's a specific type of fat, and the Torah prohibits eating that fat with a very severe prohibition of kares. If a person eats, you get spiritually cut off if you eat that fat. So the Gemara, when it discusses, many, many times talks about, it probably looks fairly similar to the permitted types of fat. And so that's a classic example that the Gemara wants to talk about, where a person violated the prohibition unwittingly, didn't realize. They thought it was permitted fat, and it turns out it was the forbidden fat. So what do you do? I thought it was okay. Okay, so you did something wrong. You ate something that's not permitted. So you bring an atonement. But in the scheme of things, who have you offended? What have you? I thought it was okay. It's not okay. But you ate a piece of fat at the end of the day. Says the Ramban. But our topic, who have you offended at the end of the day? You used my stuff and you didn't pay attention enough to know that it was my stuff. And therein lies the problem. Sometimes you can get away, and we've brought this example many times. If a husband were to say, "Ah, I can't believe it, I forgot our anniversary again." Now, he might be telling the truth. He might be telling the truth. He forgot the anniversary again. That's the problem. You can say, I forgot to take out the garbage. I can forgive you. I can forgive you. You forgot to take out the garbage. Like, every Monday night you need to do so, and you forgot, and now we have a problem, and what are we going to do? I understand. You forgot. You were busy with other things. Life happens, and we make mistakes. That's the normal scenario of, I forgot. I thought this was okay, and it turns out it wasn't. There are certain things when you do wrong, that doesn't work. I forgot. Your sin is in that you didn't remember. You forgot our anniversary isn't... next Monday you'll remember. No, it doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way. So says the Ramban, Mi'ila is on the list of higher level violations that require a destruction. No, we don't want that. We're going to let you get atoned for. The atonement's going to be in this new category, but it's only inadvertent. You didn't care enough to find out this isn't allowed. Whose is this? You used my things. And if you take a real example, if a person would go into the palace in England and use the queen's things, like, oh, I didn't realize this was your thing. At the end of the day, you're a commoner. You just put on the queen's crown I didn't realize. I thought it was just, you know, a Purim costume. Yeah. It doesn't work that way. There's a certain violation of what you have desecrated and violated in that. Even though it was only inadvertence, but that's a violation of what we call Me'ilah, and it brings about this particular carbon. Okay. Now, to further that thought, this concept of utilizing something in it that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash is called again Me'ilah, Mem Ayin Lam. If I had my little whiteboard, we'd put that up on the board. So it's the person who does it is a Mo'el. The violation is known as Me'ilah. You could be Mo'el Ma'al Bahashem. We just finished Sefer Shmos, and we dealt with the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan, the construction of it extensively. And in the construction of the Mishkan, there was the building of the actual tabernacle itself and all of the vessels. And then there was, for every one parsha that discussed the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a second parsha that discussed the constructing of the clothing for the Kohen and for the Kohen Gadol. And so we had a parsha that discussed how to do it, and then that they did it many times the last 5 weeks. There was a particular garment known in English as the robe. It looks like this. And it's called the Me'il. Me'il, spelled Mem, Ayin, Yud, Lamed, which is exactly the same as the violation called Me'ilah, which we have just been discussing. Rav Hirsch, who was a major scholar when it came to language and the words and the roots and when they share roots, was very troubled that the word for this desecration, as the Torah translates, as we translate the word, when you violate Me'ilah, the language that the Torah used, or at least the art scroll, when it translates this treacherous violation of using sanctified property for your own needs, is called Me'ilah. What a funny thing that the robe that the Kohen, the high priest, wears should be called a Me'il. And as Rav Hirsch, the Torah doesn't run out of words. It wasn't like Hashem, I can't think of a new one. I'll just double up and utilize one that I've already used before. Why should words share the same shoresh if they're not in some way related? And he was very troubled by the relationship between the robe and this treacherous misuse of sanctified property. In his discussion, which we'll see inside in a moment, he said, we actually find something similar elsewhere. How do you refer to a garment? What is the word for garment in Hebrew?
Beged.
Beged, excellent. What do you call a traitor?
Bogade.
A bogade, excellent. A bogade is one who is a traitor. Very strange. The three letters of clothing is a beged. And if you differentiate the vowelization, you get the same word for a traitor. And in both instances, says Rav Hirsch, we find the idea of a garment, the robe of a Kohen Gadol, and if you misappropriate sanctified things, it's called Me'ilah. And the word for beged, clothing, a traitor is referred to a bogeh. Both times we find the garment related to the usage of or misusage of an item or of trust. And Rav Hirsch says the fascinating thing following, which you have in your sheets on the other side, says Rav Hirsch, starting from that top line there, first he points out that the word the Torah introduces is not just if a person sins, but nefesh, using the word for soul, which includes everybody, meaning even if the high priest himself misappropriates the use of the items in the Beis HaMikdash. Ma'al, and that underlined word. The word, in its relationship to Me'il, is the mantle of the high priest, his robe. Why do we have the same word? He says, similar to beged, clothing, or bogade, which is to be faithless or disloyal, and beged, which is garment. Says Rav Hirsch, is an excellent example of the harmonious trend of thought, which is formed by the roots of the words of the Hebrew language. If you follow the roots, he says, you'll find themes which run and why the Torah uses the same word. Beged means the garment of a human being. What do we do with a garment? What is a garment to us? Let's just talk this outside. Right, outside, and it displays to the world what we want them to see and to think of us. And we all know, as much as we sometimes want to say, why should people judge me by why? You could complain about that all you want. That's the reality. Not just that they do and if we don't want them, but we want them to do that. We specifically often will dress in a way that displays who we are and what we want them to think. If I want to be a high-flying lawyer that charges $500 an hour, you better believe you're going to dress the part. Because you got to look the way you want to be a doctor. If a doctor would walk in, a heart surgeon walks in shorts and a t-shirt and sneakers, it just doesn't feel right that I'm about to put my life in your hands, who's going to cut me open and take a look at my heart. I want you to look the part.
Does that mean a lawyer has to wear a lawsuit?
Did you just think of that right now?
Yes. Sorry.
Just popped in. So we use our clothing and in social settings as well. I'm speaking to a room full of women. Every time you go to events, you're only going, okay, what am I supposed to wear? I have nothing to wear. You have 1,000 outfits in front of you, but I know I need the right one for this event. That's exact level of fanciness, not too fancy, but not too casual. That conveys exactly what I wanted to convey for this event, because it's important, and it fits, and that's what we use a baguette for. Says Rav Hirsch, baguette is the garment of a human being, and bogade is to be faithless, to break faith in general human matters. What does it mean when you're a traitor? What does it mean to be a traitor? It means I've led you to believe one thing about me, and then I've taken the rug right out from underneath you when it suits me, and I have violated your trust in what I've led you to believe about me. In the most classic term, the traitor of a country is, we assume, loyal to his country, and then does something that undermines that land. You're being traitorous. Me'il, the me'il is the beged, the clothing of the high priest. When the high priest puts on that garment, we expect a certain behavior, the way that he'll relate to the items in the Beis HaMikdash. Me'ilah, to be mo'el, is to break faith in holy priestly matters that you were entrusted with wearing that garment displaying, I am the Kohen Gadol, and now I have violated that through misappropriate usage. Obviously, says refers by section B, bogade is to behave as a mere garment. When I'm a traitor, I'm behaving as a garment. I'm saying, on the outside, I look one way, but it's just my external. It's just what I could put on or take off. It's not the real me, and it's there to mislead you. And mo'el is to behave as merely the cloak of a priest. To see someone clothed in human garments makes one conclude that here is a real human being. When you see someone wearing it, you say, oh, it's a person. That's what I assume. If someone puts trust in me as being a true human being, and I betray that trust, then I have shown myself to be merely a cloak of a human being. I wear the outer appearance of a human being, but it was only the mask of a human being. And in the same way, a Kohen, or a person who is in violation of Me'ilah, would be justified in expecting priestly sentiments and behavior, and proved himself not up to the task.
So what happens to him?
To who?
Priest who doesn't behave the way he should.
I don't know if he would maintain his status, but as far as the logistics go, he would be subject to the same penalties as the Torah delineates here. Whether or not he loses his position, he'd be subject to, I don't know if that automatically disqualifies him. Remember, it's an inadvertent violation. So I don't know if he, by definition, loses it or not. It's possible, but I don't know. So that's a very beautiful idea, that the language, the Torah utilizes the language of beged and boged, as it does here for me'ilah. When you're violating me'ilah, you're misappropriating the usage of something sanctified, is the same word as the cloak of the Kohen Gadol, who's supposed to personify appropriate usage. And a person can act like a traitor with their clothing and can display one thing to the world around them, and then we suddenly discover it's not quite that way. And clothing play a very important role. We find clothing in many different areas. As far as where we could trace it, we've spoken about it before in the past, of this idea of how it covers the outside, but it also allows us to display, transmit all sorts of messages, which we sometimes want to display who we really are, and we sometimes use to hide who we are and mislead those around us, which is why the word for traitor is the same word for clothing, as a warning to us. Be careful when you see the clothing. It can be a treacherous, traitorous kind of experience of you never really know, just because a person put on a garment, what really is going on outside. And Rav Hirsch sees that theme in Mi'ila, which is the same word as the Kohen Gadol's own garment, of this theme in which we use the word for the outward garment worn by an individual as the same violation of that principle if done in an inappropriate way. One last thought. You have a sitter in front of you. If you want to follow us inside, you can. You don't have to if you don't want to. We're going to Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Dr. Abram Tversky references this idea about this, that which we've been talking about, a mission in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos. Towards the end, that's on page 578 in your sitter. Mishnah Chaf Beis, the 22nd mission in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos. Mishnah says as follows. 578. Kol mi sheyesh biyado shlosha dvarim halalu. Anyone who has these three traits, whom he talmidav shel Avram Avinu, you know that he is a disciple, a student of Avram Avinu. Shlosha dvarim acherim, and three other traits, whom he talmidav shel Bilam Harasha. He's indeed a disciple of Bilam, the wicked Bilam, who we'll read about in a few weeks' time. What are the three traits that identify the students of Avram Avinu? Ayin Tova, having a good eye, which of course does not mean 20/20 vision, it means seeing the world with a good eye, seeing the world generously, seeing people generously, seeing the good in things. Ruach Nemucha, having a humble spirit, and a Nefesh Shvala, a meek soul, which we're not going to get into the details of exactly what's the difference between a humble spirit and a meek soul. There's clearly a element of humility that's being described, a lack of haughtiness, a sense of knowing one's place. Those traits are the traits of Avram Avinu. Ayin Ra, says the Mishnah, the opposite, having a evil or wicked eye, a stingy eye, Ruach Gvoha, a arrogant spirit, and a greedy soul, a Nefesh Rechava, Talmidah Shel Bilam Harasha. That's how we can tell who's disciple. You're a student of Avram or of Bilam. And the Mishnah goes on to say, and what's the difference between them? So the students of Avram not only benefit from this world, but they'll inherit the world to come as well. Whereas the students of Bilam not only will inherit Gehenna in the world to come, but do not enjoy this world as well. And so the Mishnah goes on to say that. Rav Tversky quotes one of the commentators on the Mishnah, who says an interesting thing, that the Mishnah says in its introductory lines, these traits are the traits of the students of Avram, and these are the traits of the students of Bilam. So in a Hasidish way of asking the question, he said, why don't you just say, these are the traits of Avraham, and these are the traits of Bilam. Why don't we only focus on the students, the disciples of an Avram? Tell me the difference between Avram himself and Bilam, not just the difference between the disciples of Avram and Bilam. So Rabbi Tversky quoted, because sometimes it's the case that you can't really tell who a person is looking at the person himself. A person can project himself in a way that if you just look at them, you might say, oh, indeed, they're a pretty righteous person. But you can tell who they really are when you look at the next generation. Look at what happens to their students. Then you see what was really in the core inside. A Bilam HaRasha can dress himself up, and he can say, I was a prophet. He can dress himself up in a fancy, fine suit, and he can look quite nice and do or say all the right things. But how do you know that really what's going on is the wickedness of a Bilam HaRasha? Look and see what happens from the disciples. Look and see what happens. When you see, Avram, Hashem himself says of Avram, when Hashem is about to destroy the city of Sodom, and he says, I have to tell Avram. I have to tell him. How can I not tell Avram what's going on? the language that Hashem uses when he says, I have to tell Abram, is Ki hu yitzava es bincha alechas b'derach Hashem, because he's going to command his sons to follow in the way of Hashem. That's the language that Hashem uses. Why Abram is so great, I have to tell him, because he's going to continue this. He's going to maintain this down to the next generations. He's going to teach them to follow in the ways of mishpat, of tzedek, of justice, of righteousness. So how can I not tell Avram Avinu what I'm about to do and let him try to intercede on behalf of Sodom? So Rabbi Twersky brings this as a tie-in of this idea. We see from the Ramban that the Me'ila itself, the misappropriate usage of the Beis HaMikdash, is a serious affront to Hashem's kavod, to his own honor, and it gets its own category. And it's, as Rav Hirsch points out, the name of it, Me'ila, is the same word as the own clothing of a Kohen Gadlus. That's exactly right. Something you can dress in a way, but it's treacherous. You're being a traitor, you're not being true, you're misleading that which you're supposed to be reflecting as a Kohen Gadol who wears it as our clothing sometimes do, and you could often see the true essence of who a person is in the students, in the next generation, of how they teach and what they teach, because a person can dress themselves up to look or be almost anything they want. And it's not for us ever to judge. But if one were trying to, looking at the externals will never do it, because you can fool anybody with a garment. Mm-hmm. Look any way that you want. But if a person sees the follow-up of how things come out, then you sometimes see the qualities of what was really being taught in the classroom, what was being taught in the home, as you see qualities that are transmitted from generation to generation. And Avram's Talmidim, it's the Talmidim of Avram that have an Ayin Tova, that have a Ruach Nemucha and a Nefesh Shvolo, a good eye and a humble spirit, and the opposite of a greedy soul, as the Talmidim of Avram Avinu. Those are the thoughts for today. I wish you all a wonderful day.
Would you say...